This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. My co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site for SB Nation. Seth, we are in episode 221, and just when you thought that Kyler Murray talk couldn't get any worse, it is a wildfire of stuff. So when we thought that we were just going to be talking about team needs, we're going to talk a lot about Kyler Murray, right?
Right, exactly. Like, you come into this offseason and you don't really think anything of it. I mean, I think you and I kind of mentioned it in passing when it first came out, and now it's literally, I mean, you and I are, you know, you're much more of a reporter than I am, but we're both guys on blogs and stuff like that. Like, this is not our real job. And I've had, in the past week, I've had 6 radio requests because it's just, I mean, it's literally all anybody wants to talk about. And so it's not a bad thing. And I tried to explain this, you know, the last time we talked, like you have to just embrace it. Like, you can't get upset. You can't get mad at people that are, you know, okay with this or are willing to listen or, you know, think that it may happen or even embrace that it's happening. Because it is what it is at this, like, it is a narrative, and the Cardinals are leaning in completely to this whole thing because they love the attention. I mean, you and I have, you and
I. Seems to be the only thing that makes sense is that we're going to talk about on this show is that the only thing that this makes sense about is, hey, they just want to be in the news.
Right, and you and I have covered, I mean, you've covered the Cardinals since, what, 2010?
Yeah.
So 9 years, I've been doing this for about 4 years. Even in the NFC Championship run of 15-16, there's never been this much interest in the Arizona Cardinals. Never.
Nope, and now they don't know what to do with it. And so this show is going to episode 221, we're going to be talking about Kyler Murray. We're going to give our thoughts. We're going to break down everything that's going on, the good and the bad of it. Because you know, we both embrace this chaos that's going on. I'll tell you up front, as much as I love that it's happening, I don't want it to actually happen because I think it's not smart football wise, and you're taking huge, huge risks in the way. But that's for the discussion. That's not the only thing we're going to talk about. We just finished seeing the NFL Combine. The NFL Combine is all wrapped up, so we're going to talk about the winners and losers from the Combine, the players who showed up, showed out, and the ones who maybe, probably, disappointed us a little bit. Then from there, we'll talk a little bit of a roster move that happened as Josh Bynes became the first of the Cardinals' axes in the offseason. He was cut. We'll talk about that, what that means. And then we'll go into what was originally supposed to be the big theme of this show, which was the team needs. We're going to go on the offensive side of the ball, defensive side of the ball, go position by position, and we're going to go through what do they need to add to this roster this year, whether it's a starter, whether it's depth, whether it is via free agency or the draft. What do we want to see happen? And that'll take us to our show next week when we actually preview free agency. So let's kick this off with what is the latest that we know about Kyler Murray. And this is what we know. One, Kyler Murray might just be big enough for the NFL. 5'10 and an eighth. So he's not under 5'10. So he's almost Russell Wilson at 5'11 at the combine, but here it is. He isn't 5'9, 165 as many jokingly or half imagined he would be. He came in at 5'10 and an eighth, 207. In comparison, Russell Wilson was 5'11, 204. What did that show for you? Did that take away any of your concerns that he might have had in terms of size and frame?
You know, I've never been concerned about that with Murray, just because of the way I know Kingsbury's offense works and then the way Murray works within, you know, kind of that air raid spread type of offense. So when you look at it from that perspective, it was always going to be, in that sense, he was going to be fine in the NFL. You know, if you asked him to do things like Tom Brady or, you know, even Drew Brees to an extent, he probably wasn't going to be as successful. So it's just about, you know, finding – it's just about finding the way for him to fit. And, you know, when you look at it, you would think or hope that he was probably going to fit best in terms of with the Arizona Cardinals, but his size is always going to be a concern simply because it is unorthodox. It's different than what the typical quarterback is, and so you are taking a chance because of how, you know, kind of black and white NFL teams are with you know, kind of their expectations of size for their players and how they like their players built in terms of, you know, checking off boxes, so to speak.
Right. And now for me, I wasn't nearly as concerned about the height. The frame was what worried me in terms of the transfer of play in the NFL, and the fact that he was able to get up over 200. Who knows? The question is to whether what type of frame that was now, but the fact he can carry 200 pounds makes you. You with the Russell Wilson comp, and I guess what a lot of people worried about and why they missed on Russell Wilson is there was no comp for him, and it ended up being why people missed on him is because they didn't realize how important or less important that height was when he checked off all the other boxes. Smart leadership. He knows how to take care of his body, but then he has those elite traits of his arm strength and his accuracy and his playmaking ability that it became, as we looked back at that draft, the only knock was for size. And other than the, cause he was always a thicker frame to begin with. So he had that compact build to him. Kyler Murray didn't look like that in college. If he can be that, you now have a comp in the league that you can say, okay, this can work and this can be very good, but it was a matter of would he be able to handle the pounding? And now we just have to determine, does he have elite all those other traits? The arm strength, the big arm, the throwing talent, the accuracy, the smarts, the leadership skills. That's the stuff that's going to be debated over the next little while. But now which you've got a Russell Wilson in place, you can actually have a player comp for him, which teams love to do. If there's the teams don't like to, and they definitely won't at the top of the draft a guy that breaks a mold because there's too much at stake. There's way too much at stake.
Yeah. And the NFL is a league that, you know, really doesn't stray from what that mold is. And so, like you said, when you have a guy like Russell Wilson, that, like you said, checks a lot of the same boxes, it makes it easier for teams to then take a, you know, quote unquote chance on a similar type player.
Right. Now, that's the first thing that happened. After that, the rumors that came about, it seems like it, and we'll have to be perfectly honest, as we know very well, the Cardinals have not 100% decided on a top pick because they don't build their draft board until about a week before the draft. Now, clearly, there's going to be guys that are going to be in play early on. But what was the chatter all over the combine? Supposedly, Cliff Kingsbury himself was out and about saying it's a done deal. So there are reporters out there saying that they heard that Cliff Kingsbury was going around telling people at dinner in Indianapolis, it's a done deal. Kyler's our guy. It's going to happen. Late on Sunday night, there was a report from Omar Kelly out there in Florida. You have to love the way that it comes across. First, he says, you know, he's lining up a quarterback somewhere in Oakland. You've got Kyler Murray to the Cardinals, and with Josh Rosen likely to be traded to the Washington Redskins, that it would happen before the league year started. And then he adds this, the streets is talking and it's going to happen. We've heard other people say the same thing, that the Cardinals and Murray are a lock. The smoke, the everything, all those coincidences before are seeming to line up. And so the chatter is the Cardinals are taking Murray number one. And now, as the kind of things we all have to wait for is, okay, we'll take the chatter. We'll roll with it. There's rumors, there's subterfuge, there's misinformation out there. But the second that we get a report that the Cardinals are actually in trade talks for Josh Rosen, that's when the things get serious, because if they trade Josh Rosen, you know for a fact they're drafting a quarterback, then it's probably going to be Kyler Murray. Why wouldn't it be? And now we finally have a report, Charlie Casserly report, not a reporter report, but someone who's in the know with things. Who has
NFL media, yeah.
That says that the Cardinals have been shopping Rosen. So get ready, guys. Something's happening or something's not happening. But now that report's out there, which then lends credence to the idea that they're going to take Kyler Murray first overall. What's going on?
You know, you look at it, and I think a lot of it is simply – and I thought you had a pretty succinct tweet on it the other day, and I think it was you just kind of trying to make sense of everything as much as you were.
I had that. Granted, I went on a rampage on Twitter a little bit. Some of it was thoughtful, some of it was just, hey, let's burn it all down. We're just doing changing everything.
But I think you kind of hit it on the head that the whole idea is, you know, they came in with this idea that, hey, Rosen's our guy. All right. So, you know, if we line up the timeline, Kyler Murray hadn't declared for the draft when they hired Cliff Kingsbury. You're not going to come in with a new coach without knowing what you have, right? Like, you're not going to say, oh, and by the way, we're shopping Josh Rosen, you know, because if Cliff is truly infatuated with Murray, and there's no reason to think he's not. I mean, he's been after the kid since he was a sophomore in high school. So he clearly thinks very highly of him as a football player. So they came in, they said, Rosen's our guy. That was truthful. I mean, that was the truth at the time. Kyler Murray declares. We get the first kind of hint of it, but the biggest thing with Murray was he truly in? You know, was he truly into football? Because you got to remember, he had that big contract with the Oakland A's. He was the ninth pick in the Major League Baseball draft. So, I mean, he had options. And then it happens. He pays back most of his bonus. He then forgoes the rest of his bonus, which was about $5 million. Gone. I mean, it's the Oakland A's still retain his rights, but he has no money at this point, you know, for baseball. So all of a sudden the Cardinals are going, or maybe Cliff Kingsbury is going, hey, this is who I want. If we can make this happen, let's make this happen. So you go to the combine and you start to all of a sudden peruse the room. You know that the Miami Dolphins, you know that the New York Giants, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Washington Redskins, you know those teams need a quarterback. They're in the market for a quarterback. You look at teams like the Pittsburgh Steelers, the New Orleans Saints, the New England Patriots, and know that they could be interested in a potential quarterback. And so you start to, you know, just get the feelers out there, because you know your coach that you just hired, the one that you're hoping will turn around what was the worst team in the NFL, has an affinity for a player. But here's the other kicker, and this is something that, you know, I shared with you. I think it was Saturday I shared it with you. I don't remember off the top of my head what day exactly it was, but and it's been kind of now public, so I'm not worried about talking about it. But one of my contacts told me on Saturday, so this is kind of right when the Murray circus took off, wouldn't you say, right around Saturday, when it just all of a sudden everything was, oh my gosh, the Cardinals are going to go after Kyler. Like, Kyler Murray is the first pick of the draft. The Cardinals love Kyler Murray. And so I got a tip that the Oakland Raiders, despite John Gruden and Mike Mayock's insistence otherwise, had gone to teams, not necessarily teams that had gone to them, but that had gone to teams and seen about their interest in Derek Carr. And so, you know, I asked around, I tried to feel out why they would be going away from Carr. And the rumor is, and the idea is that it's for Kyler Murray, that the Raiders are in fact also allegedly in love with Kyler Murray. So if you're the Cardinals and you catch wind of this, and you get wind of this, let's say Friday, because, you know, obviously we're all going to be a little bit behind what's going on, and you get wind of this on a Friday, wouldn't you start to kind of float these ideas out a little bit on Saturday? Hey, you know what? We really like this Kyler Murray kid. We're really interested in him, because either it's true, which is fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it being true. And then people are going to start giving you their kind of best offers, or you're going to kind of start to hear offers on Josh Rosen of what they may want. Or it's not true, but you do know that the Oakland Raiders allegedly are interested in him. And so you're saying, hey, we're interested in this kid. We're willing to take him at one and figure out how to deal with it. Are you willing to make it worth it for us not to do so? So that is, you know, kind of the avenue I've been pursuing. I wrote about it yesterday, and I talked about it with you beforehand. Like, the numbers I was told that if the Raiders were to make a move up, it wouldn't be as much as maybe the Cardinals would hope. Or maybe the fans would hope. But I've seen a lot of fans okay with, you know, kind of these odd numbers. And so it would be 24, and then it would be like their third round pick, which would be 66. You know, for me, I've said I don't think that's enough. You know, this is something we'll talk about as we get a little closer to the draft. But I just, for me, that's not something I would be interested in. But to go back to the Murray thing, wouldn't this all make sense? Like, so they're kind of having their cake. They're trying to have their cake and eat it too. Like, maybe they really do like Kyler Murray. Maybe they are 100% interested in Kyler Murray. And in that, they are, you know, kind of fishing to see what other teams would give them for Josh Rosen. But at the same time, they're putting it out there that, hey, if you you want Kyler Murray, Oakland Raiders, if you're truly interested in Kyler Murray, like the rumors are saying, you're going to have to go through us because we're willing to move on from Josh Rosen for Murray unless you make it worth our while. So it's, you know, it could be one of those situations, or it could just be that, you know, all hell has completely broken loose and the Cardinals have lost their minds.
Well, and that's interesting, the perspective you take on that, because when I hear it's when it becomes almost a set certainty, I hadn't thought that maybe a team that likes him that much is what would get desperate. But to me, in my opinion, by putting this out there, you're hurting yourself, in my opinion, you're hurting yourself for the value of that first overall pick. Because if the entire world knows you're taking Kyler Murray, they take them off the board temporarily. And, well, there's no point in training up because he's going to be off the board, which would then make, if you're looking at quarterbacks or looking at specific players, that drives up the price for pick number two for San Francisco, in my opinion. And at the same time, if you are dead set on drafting Kyler Murray the way it makes it sound like, what it also does is drive down the value you could get for Josh Rosen. Because the other teams will know, well, if you're drafting Murray, like if you really are not open to keeping Josh Rosen. Now, what we haven't heard enough of yet, and maybe this is the balance that comes, is that we're heavy on the Murray, and then this narrative is going to flip as to, no, we think Josh Rosen is our quarterback. We've told him as such. We see him as a quarterback, as a future, as a franchise quarterback. Maybe the narrative flips. That's what has to happen. Otherwise, in my opinion, you drive down any value to those picks, unless it's that scenario, I think, which you said, where you're trying to make the Raiders desperate. Like, if they really want Kyler Murray, then maybe they're willing to sell the farm just to get that kid. But what I think has to happen too is then that the Cardinals have to feel extremely confident, and Josh Rosen have to make that very public. That happened before, but I think all of that talk has been forgotten at this point, and which is the interesting part to that. And so the question now becomes, what can the Cardinals get for Josh Rosen if they do decide to move? Because the way I see Rosen right now is, and maybe it's just a little bit of skepticism here, I can't imagine a quarterback who was, you know, who clearly there were concerns about him in terms of temperament. And then he goes out and has a very underwhelming year, a rookie year, who was a first-round pick. I think it would be outrageous to think that the Cardinals are actually going to recoup a first-round pick. Like, the notion that Washington's going to give up the number 15 pick overall for Rosen, this feels to me like the new car scenario. You buy a car, and this is what happens with all new cars. Basically, you drive it off the lot, and what happens to its value? It plummets. You know why? The simple thing of this: if this brand new car that you loved just a few months later, or not quite a year later, you're trying to get rid of, that's a really bad sign. That's a lemon sign. And I think in that case, between what Rosen did on the field, and the fact that, well, the team that knows him most intimately is willing to give up on him after less than a year, with all the mitigating circumstances around his struggles last year, I can't see a team ponying up what the Cardinals would want, especially with the financials that are involved, because the Cardinals are going to eat a whole bunch of dead money just to deal him.
Yeah, and so the Rosen thing is interesting, and you kind of hit it on that. Like, they're not going to get what you and I or fans in general would consider fair trade. Now, I did read something interesting, and it was that, what if Washington gives up their third this year? And I know you guys are thinking third, that's it. But with another pick next year, and you're talking a third, that moves to a second, that moves to a first based on obviously however he Rosen plays for the Redskins. Is that something like, because then obviously you don't want him to be unsuccessful. I mean, you don't ever cheer for a guy other than the one time he's playing you a year, but that for somebody to fail. But at the same time, you, if you trade him and he's successful, you're really going to put all that, all those eggs in the Murray basket. And, you know, if that doesn't work out, then it makes you look really bad. But so, I mean, is that something that you would think that you would be interested in as a Cardinals fan, that you would take, you know, basically a guaranteed three this year and then a three that could go to a two or a one, depending on, you know, playing time, success rate, things of that nature?
Well, for me, it comes down to this. I would feel like I, if that's the best that's out there, I would be okay with that as long as I'm convicted about Kyler Murray. For me, that's ultimately what it comes down to, that you as an organization, you better be right that one, either Rosen, like you were wrong last year. You were like you were dead wrong about Rosen, the way apparently the organization was about Steve Wilks. So you're cutting your losses and you think he's bad and Kyler Murray is a significant upgrade, or you stand by the fact that Rosen is going to be a franchise quarterback, but Murray is just that much better, that you think, oh, he has. The last quarterback that I can remember, Andrew Luck, when he was drafted, there was the talk of him being a Hall of Fame type talent, like a can't miss talent. So they clearly would have to believe that Kyler Murray is a can't miss. And if that's the case, well, I guess so. You take that third and the third next year. But obviously, for me, it comes down to, I'm going to take whatever market is there if Murray is my guy.
Right. And so, you know, the other thing is this, and you and I were talking about this off the air, there's also this instance of you've already basically, I don't want to say sabotage, but you've somewhat submarined your expected cap number this year. They're sitting after, which we'll talk about later, after cutting Josh Bynes, they're sitting at only $36 million, or right around $37 million. Now, does that include? I didn't pay enough attention. Does that include the draft pool, you think?
Or, yes, it does.
Okay, so yes.
I was with the draft pool. They're looking at, the last I saw was about $38 million, which I think my calculations are putting between $38 and $40 million. For free agency, the draft pool is excluded from that because they're going to have a pretty big draft pool.
So I mean, $38 million, that's going to go, I mean, even at 40, that's going to go quick. I mean, you and I know that that's going to be,
if they make any splash at all. Yeah.
It's so, I mean, in the numbers that are getting thrown around for like CJ Mosley, like $14 million, like, wow, and obviously they can backload it and whatnot, but the other thought is, we know, you know, you're not going to sell this to the fans, but we know that we're not going to compete in 2019. We had to completely tear down what we started to build in 2018 because of, you know, we messed it up. It wasn't done right. It wasn't done well, yada, yada, yada. So you take that and you move on and you say, let's just get whatever we can for Josh. We're going to eat the cap this year. The what is it? 13, nearly 14 million. You know, we're going to eat the cap, and we know it's not the best alternative, but it's creating a window now starting in 2019. And moving forward from there, where, you know, we didn't have the $80 million that we were expecting to have when we came into things because it just didn't work out. And so those are, you know, those are the kind of things that go through your mind when all of this is happening, because you're right. Like, trading Rosen is a financial hit, and it takes the Cardinals, if, which we assume, if they traded Rosen, they would take Kyler Murray at one, and it would take the Cardinals' investment at quarterback to about 29 this year. So, I mean, that's including Sam Bradford, who I still think would be the highest paid quarterback on their roster. But that would be Sam Bradford, Mike Glennon, you know, Josh Rosen and Kyler Murray, and then whatever Chad Knopf is kind of pitching in at the end there. So that's the hard part of the whole situation, is that you've got to figure out, like, are you really willing to eat this cap? Is it worth saying it was a mistake, we're going to now, you know, move on after only one season? And that's a hard sell to not just the fan base because of the player, but because of the ramifications of the cap.
Right. That's the part that's going to be rough. Yeah. It almost feels like if they make this move, they're blowing up 2019. So forget all the talk that they're saying about making this a quick turnaround. So it would be a miraculous way to turn out. So they're going to, and especially since Keim has actually also suggested that they might not be as aggressive in free agency as you thought. That they're going to try and not spend the big money on players early on. So it'll be deals a few days later after the big money's gone. So maybe there's something to this, that they're almost blowing up 2019 to then basically erase everything that happened last year. Because what we thought was, okay, starting this year, this is the year they're going to start going all in because they've got that rookie quarterback deal. They can add pieces. When they might go, oh, we'll start over, and we're gonna go all in next year when we've got much more money available. We've got all of Bradford's dead money coming off the books. Rosen's dead money will be off the books. Andre Smith's dead money will be off the books. Mike Iupati's money will be off the books. And in terms of what it will do for the Rosen deal, if it would become like the amount of dead money, if you cut him, is nearly $14.4 million, which is an additional. So he's due to count basically $4 million against the cap this year. It would cost an additional $10.4 million charge against the cap. So what if they got $40 million, bring it down to about $30 million of cap space. If it's a trade, it actually is a little less damaging. It would mean about a $2 million less negative charge to the cap, because the other team would assume the other parts of it, and they would just have to pay the prorated. They would just be accounted for the prorated signing bonus. But nonetheless, to go from $38 million to $30 million in free agency, or from 40 to 32, that and to be subtracting a player as opposed to adding a player, that's the exact opposite of what you do want to do in free agency. So maybe.
And what we expected to happen. I mean, that's the other thing with this is, you know, again, there was no way that they were coming out and going, oh, we're blowing this whole thing up. We're getting rid of Josh. Like we're starting from scratch because we have the first pick. They couldn't do that. It was just, it wouldn't have been a safe or smart thing to do. But at the same time, it's still a hard sell, right? Because if they start to do it, or if they do it, it's still one of those situations where you go, man, really? Like, I mean, you have to be able to see the long-term vision. And it was something that you and I have talked about, is like, maybe this was the sell Bidwill gave to Steve Keim, is that, look, I'm giving you 3 years to figure this out. You've got 3 years. Do whatever you need to do. If you need to make whatever happened in 2018 disappear, make it disappear. And it seems asinine, but when you're desperate, when you're trying to fix something that was clearly broken, you have to go to extreme measures at the same time.
And let's kind of wrap that up. We've enough talking about Kyler Murray. There are so many other players to talk about at the Combine. That's what we're going to talk about next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk Combine. Obviously, Kyler Murray was a big winner in the Combine by simply showing up and measuring over 5'10", which, guess what? That took no talent. And then eating enough and drinking enough water and probably not pooping the morning of his weigh-in to come in over 200 pounds. Yay. But he was not the only player to wow. Who were some of the, who were some of the biggest winners, or who stood out to you in terms of the Combine as helping themselves? Maybe it was just meeting expectations, and maybe it was, hey, we need to go back and look more at what his play was.
Well, I thought the first guy, and I mean, there's a lot of guys, so we're not going to go over everybody, but like looking at it from a Cardinals lens, the first guy that really kind of stood out to me, and I thought did a really nice job, was N'Keal Harry. There was a lot of questions about his size, his speed. Was he a guy that could do, you know, X, Y, and Z? And so he came in an inch shorter than his ASU measurement, which isn't actually surprising. But he weighed 228. He put up great numbers on the bench, put up 27 reps on the bench press. But then his vertical was, you know, 38 and a half inches, which was really, really good. And then he got down to a 4.53 40, which I thought was going to be tough for him. I really did. And then you saw him and he was able to do it. And, you know, so at 6'3", basically 228 pounds, he's basically made himself, I would say, into a first rounder. Like, I don't see him not going in the first round. He's a guy that's a size, you know, kind of size speed matchup guy that's going to be tough to, you know, take on physically. He's a guy that we've talked a lot about because he was a guy that did punt and kick returns, and they don't put bad athletes back there. And I always thought that was interesting that a lot of people labeled him as a bad athlete. I didn't ever see that. And so it was interesting to see how well he did. And I thought that he kind of showed us exactly what we needed to see. I think for Cardinals fans, if you're also an ASU fan, it's unfortunate because it's basically taking him out of the chance of being available at 33, at least in my eyes.
Yeah, probably. For me, one of the most important, this is something that you and I discussed and I wrote about it, is this didn't necessarily increase his stock overall, but I think it created separation on two levels. Nick Bosa looked good. Obviously the 40 time, that's not real significant. There's minor significance, but what we saw from Joey Bosa is that his 40 time wasn't good, but some other of those athletic tests showed things. And Bosa showed that at his size, that getting off, so his, like you talked about, his 10 yard split, very good. His three cone, very good. His 20 yard shuttle, very good. And then he had enough in terms of explosiveness with his vertical at his size that you're like, it basically, when it came to Nick Bosa, the concerns were durability and the athletic traits. I think you would agree, he did exactly what he needed to do to show, hey, we saw the disruptive play on the field. We saw top disruptive play on the field consistently when he was on the field. Yes, the medicals are one thing, but is he athletic enough a player to be at the top of the draft? And I think he proved he was. So it comes down to, do you want Nick Bosa or do you really need a quarterback?
Right. And I think when you look at what Bosa did, you kind of nailed it. Like, they are, I don't want to say he's locked himself in, but he's made it where there's only one other non-quarterback option. And you and I aren't saying or advising that the Cardinals should take a quarterback, but if they're not going to take Nick Bosa, there's only one other option. And I thought he was another, you know, winner at the combine. And that was Quinnen Williams, who came in a little shorter, a little fatter, and then really athletic.
Really athletic. Like, if you saw the overlay, the video overlay, where he outdoes NFC West quarterbacks Josh Rosen and Jimmy Garoppolo, neither of whom are considered non-athletic. Those are fairly athletic quarterbacks. They're not fast, but they're athletic, and Quinnen blows them away.
Yeah, and they're just, you know, he's one of those guys that it's a really hard sell, because again, we talked about how the NFL does things, and they don't draft down linemen that aren't edge rushers early. It doesn't happen. And so that is what Quinnen Williams is. I mean, people can say, oh, he can rush the passer and everything all they want. But I mean, Aaron Donald's the best defensive player in the NFL, and he still went in, what, 13?
Yeah.
And it's nothing against Quinnen Williams, but he's not Aaron Donald. So, like, when you look at it from that perspective, it's a tough sell. But if you're asking me, the only two guys worth the first pick in the draft that obviously aren't quarterbacks are going to be Nick Bosa and Quinnen Williams.
For me, if you look, I think obviously Montez Sweat was a big winner, because you look at his stats and you see big production. And then when you look at the athleticism that he showed at the draft, people have said probably he made the most money from the combine, and I probably have to agree, because you get a guy that size running a 4.4 140. That's crazy, but it wasn't just straight line speed. We saw that across the board in his testing.
Yeah, that's something that – so his 4.41 was crazy, but – and not to go back to Bosa too much, but one of the things that we talk about a lot is like that 10 yards. That's that first 10 yards that they run. And the crazy thing was Bosa's time was as good as Sweat's in that. I think they were both at 1.55 the first 10 yards. So that's what was crazy, because Sweat maintained that at his size. And then he had the insane, I mean, his 36 inch vertical was really good. He had a 7 second three cone, and he had a 4.29 20 yard shuttle. So, like, this is a guy that put up just ridiculous numbers. I've seen a lot of people say this, and it makes sense to me. He's kind of bringing back that Ziggy Ansah vibe from a couple years ago. Remember, like, a guy that was just a freak athlete that didn't really put up a ton of numbers in college, and so you're like, but you can see the tools, like physical tools to work with. And so it seems like he fits, you know, fits or checks all the boxes that will be asked of him. Another guy that I was really hoping would be available at 33, and I just don't see it happening now, is Noah Fant from Iowa. I always thought it was weird that he was considered the second tight end from Iowa, because he was kind of their main guy. Like, TJ Hawkinson put up good numbers, don't get me wrong, but Fant, like, blew him away and everything. And then you kind of look at the size of Fant, and you look at the speed and what he brings to the table. And I think he would be kind of the perfect H-back move. Like, he's Charles Clay, just, what, 25 years younger? So I mean, that's what I think of Fant. I thought he would have been a nice fit at 33 if they really wanted to kind of go crazy and get Kingsbury some weapons. I don't think he's going to be there at 33 now.
Yeah, probably not. I took a look at some of the numbers of the receivers, because obviously the guys that got the most attention at the top were DK Metcalf and N'Keal Harry. But I put together a post on Sunday based on, let's look who are the top guys in all the athletic parts. And three names stood out to me who I don't know when they're going to get drafted, but I think they will be very productive. And the first one is a guy I think the Cardinals are going to take a long, hard look at. And probably, I think he might get drafted earlier than some predict. And that's UMass's Andy Isabella. Not only do you have the monster production in college, kind of like how Chase Edmonds was, but his all-around overall speed, a 4.33, 4.37 he ran in the 40, but then everything about his short area quickness and vertical were great. Hunter Renfrow didn't have a great 40, but his three cone, the short area stuff was top end. And then a player that had also production that I hadn't heard anything about him, but a guy that showed up on basically every single list, Notre Dame's Miles Boykin. And he came across, I mean, his production is last year. It's not over the top. He had 59 catches last year as a senior for 870 yards and 8 touchdowns. But when you see a guy like Riley Ridley, who's getting talk in the day two range, and he had 43 catches for 559.
Yeah. Well, and you got to remember, one, Notre Dame, I unfortunately watch a lot of Notre Dame football, and they're, you know, they weren't exactly throwing the ball around the yard. They did a little more as Book got more comfortable throughout the season, but it wasn't exactly their strong suit. You know, Boykin is a guy that he makes sense because he's been that kind of big outside receiver that the Cardinals are looking for in this offense. And he's not a stiff by any means. Like you kind of said, like his measurables, like his adjusted height, weight measurables are stupid, ridiculous, like 88th percentile for both his height and his weight. His wingspan's the 94th percentile. His 40-yard dash was in the 83rd percentile, which is, again, that's crazy. But his jump numbers. So you want to talk about, like, you want to talk about getting Josh Rosen weapons, right? Like, you want to talk about fixing Rosen and helping Rosen get ready. A guy that can win jump balls in Miles Boykin, he 43 and a half inches on the vertical. And then you have 140 inch broad jump. The best broad jump in combine history. So, I mean, this is a guy that just put on a flat out show. And then I would be remiss if I didn't talk about at least Emmanuel Hall as well, the kid from Mizzou.
Yes.
6'1", 201, sub 4.40, so 4.39. And then he hit the vertical 43 and a half, and then he hit the broad 141. Again, you're talking about a guy that's coming out of a spread offense that knows how to play it, that can do different things. So when you look at it from that perspective, he, like all these guys on, you know, late day two, early day three, these are all guys that make sense in that range for the Cardinals for what they're wanting to do, because they're probably not going to, I mean, maybe they have a chance to draft like a Paris Campbell. Right, like another guy that just completely blew up the combine, but in reality, they're probably going to end up having to look on day, on, like I said, late day two, maybe early day three.
There was really one player that for me was almost disappointing, but maybe it makes things easier for the draft. And that's right at the top of the draft. And that was Josh Allen. It was my impression for months that he was this freak athlete that put up the, that, so he's not, doesn't have to quite the competition, but I think his athleticism would have made something very, very appealing for the Cardinals. And while he's athletic, he was best, except for the 40-yard dash, pretty much, he was bested by Bosa and all the other athletic traits that you run across. The short area stuff, and so he didn't put up a crazy, he ran a 4.63. It's not bad, but it wasn't, he didn't come across as the freak, which for me, and I think for you too, separated, okay, Bosa is a different level.
Right, well, because here's the thing, so the one I can't get over is Josh Allen's hand size. So, I mean, I know it literally doesn't have a one iota of difference on linebackers, but if you go look at his hand size measurables, he's literally in the 1% because his hands are so tiny. So almost 6'5", and his hands are like 8¾. So it's just real funny. Sorry, I laugh at it every time.
That wasn't even a measurement I paid attention to. And
no, like if you go to his, small. He's literally like in the, and if you change it to everybody, like every football player ever, he's still in the 7th percentile.
The guy on the
receiver, baby hands.
Hunter Renfro, when I saw that, what is it, 7.78? I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, but Hunter Renfro is what, 5'9", 5'8"?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, Josh Allen's 6'5". So, but yeah, so when you talk about all that, you know, you've kind of hit it on the head, is that you've got a guy that looked like he wins with his athleticism, and he does right now. And so an athlete that wins with athleticism, that, and Jess and I are not saying he's a bad athlete. Like, I want people to understand that right now. He's a very good athlete.
He's just not elite.
Right. When you look at his 40, it was in the 90th percentile for edge rushers. Okay. But his broad jump, his three cone, his 20-yard shuttle, those were lower. When you move him off that and move him back to a linebacker, which is more what he is, than a pass rusher, hit that 40 jumps down to a 75th percentile. So that's a big drop down, right? His broad jump drops down to a 62nd percentile. His three cone drops down to a 43rd percentile. So all of a sudden he becomes a bigger athlete that doesn't move quite as well.
Definitely not Von Miller, he's definitely not Von Miller.
No. And he's not even Hassan Reddick. I mean, that's the reality. It's like when you look at Reddick's three cone and stuff, like,
that was crazy.
Right. If you put him as a linebacker for his three cone stuff, it's, you know, it's 64. His broad jump's still in the 98th percentile. So he's just not, he didn't hit the marks that you were expecting. And it doesn't make him a bad athlete. It takes him from being that special athlete that we were expecting to being, you know, a relatively normal NFL athlete.
Right. So if you're picking number one, you take Nick Bosa. If you're picking ninth or 10th, Josh Allen's still a good pick. So right. if the Cardinals ended up trading back, well, here's the thing. If the Cardinals trade back and don't get one of the top guys, then you're going to be disappointed. But you wouldn't be disappointed. Say where they were picking number 13, like they have, like with Hassan Reddick, or pick 15th or 10th. You wouldn't feel bad at all about picking Josh Allen. You just don't want to do it when you have the opportunity to get Nick Bosa.
Well, and so here's been my comparison for a while on Josh Allen. And it's a player that I think you and I both agree is a very good player. In fact, he's a free agent that we'll probably talk about in a second, and that's Anthony Barr. I think that Allen really reminds me of Anthony Barr in terms of kind of that size, speed. You know, is he really an edge rusher, or is he a guy that can rush from the edge as well as be an off-ball linebacker? And that's kind of what I look at Allen, and that's why I've never considered him strongly with the first pick. And that's why the testing kind of just reinforced my idea with that.
Yeah, and Anthony Barr, he's four-time Pro Bowler out of his 5 years in the league. And like, the numbers aren't overwhelming, but clearly he's viewed as one of the best at his position. Now, granted, he is playing a different position he's playing the Hassan Reddick position,
right,
in the Steve Wilks defense, say, as opposed to playing what would be the edge in Vance Joseph's. But Anthony Barr would probably play that quite well. And with that, let's kind of move on from that. So we're going to come back on the next segment of the Rise of Sea Red podcast. The Cardinals finally made a cut. It's kind of a surprising one. We'll talk briefly about what it means, the cutting of the loss of Josh Bynes. That's kind of next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast. Josh Bynes becomes the first casualty of the offseason for the Cardinals, as he is let go after 2 years with the team, and more importantly, only 1 year after signing a 3-year contract extension. Now, in terms of the money, it's not that big a deal. It was a 3-year deal worth a little under $6 million, but it was worth, could have been worth for up to $10 million. And he only got a 1 year, $1 million signing bonus. So it creates, it's a very reasonable dead cap of about $666,000. But they just cut a guy who was one of their best defenders for the 11 games that he played before he went on injured reserve, which...
Well, and I think he was undoubtedly the best player at the position at this moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it creates... It goes back to one of the interesting, you know, things that you've said is like, is this just a, hey, let's get rid of these Wilkes guys,
right,
type idea?
That are they going to get rid of Bynes? Because not only was he was also a leader on that team. So are they trying to get the stink of Wilkes completely out? So I expect Antoine Bethea will probably let go, and he was the leader, a captain on the team. Josh Bynes, if you look at on is Mike Glennon, like if they jettison Josh Rosen and Mike Glennon and bring in Kyler Murray and Case Keenum, you're suddenly going to have the anti-Steve Wilkes team. Now, maybe this is a case is that they knew that Josh Bynes deserved to play because he played well enough, but knew that he wasn't going to be the ideal fit here. And by releasing him a few days ahead of free agency, you allow him to. So it could have been a
risk. Yeah.
And I would fully expect him to land in Cleveland with Steve Wilkes running that defense there. But it does make something very clear. And the one thing that is very clear to me is that, guess what? The Cardinals are signing a starter on defense at linebacker.
They have to.
Right? They have to.
They just don't have a choice at this moment.
The two choices are, one, re-sign Deion Buchanan, which is, I don't think, is going to happen. I know some fans would like to see it happen, but if we look at Vance Joseph's history, he doesn't play undersized linebackers. I think I went back over from the time he was DC and the head coach. All his linebackers are 230 and up. Buchanan, 211.
Yeah, so it's just, it doesn't seem like a fit. You go through kind of the free agency list, and like you said, they don't have anybody in-house, and so they're going to have to go outside to kind of find a guy to come in. And if you buy into Pro Football Focus grades, And I'm not telling you should or shouldn't. I think it's a good tool to use. It gives us a chance to kind of compare and contrast. But you look at it, I mean, CJ Mosley is a, you know, is the big name free agent, allegedly going to command $13 to $14 million. And he was like a 73, I want to say. Yeah, 73 or something like that. And Bynes, who they just cut, was like a, what, like a 71? So yeah. It's not like, I mean, cost controlled guys that at positions of need and that are, you know, now it's still a position of need, but now it's an even bigger position of need, if that makes sense.
Right. They took a thin position and made it even thinner, which means they have something in mind. They have something in mind.
Well, and you and I have speculated and assumed, and I think probably correctly, that they're going to bring on Brandon Marshall from the Broncos. But again, I mean, Marshall's what, 30? Almost 30? And so, I mean, Bynes will be 30 this year. Would it have been the worst thing to have two veterans in there along with Hassan Reddick, depending on where you're using him? I don't know. Just it feels like for the minimal cap savings of, you know, 1.8, 1.9 million, that you're giving up more than you're likely to get back in return. But again, maybe this is just a truly a tear it down type of off season where they're going to give Hassan Reddick a full year to show us that he doesn't get it. You know, they're going to try not to interrupt whatever he has going. So, I mean, if that's the excuse, and like you said, and then they're going to bring in a veteran, a Brandon Marshall or CJ Mosley or a, you know, KJ Wright, you know, then it's fine. But it just, like you said, it seems at this point like it's a lot of wishful hoping that something works out, that instead of keeping a known commodity on.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to come back and actually talk about what we thought the main part of the show would be. We're going to talk about offensive teamies, position, and what do they need to address this offseason, draft, free agency, whatever. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Time to talk about those needs that the Cardinals have. So let's go position by position. Do they need to address the starting lineup? Do they need to address the depth? Should they approach it in free agency? Should they approach it in the draft? What types of players? We're not going to name names yet. That's what I think we want to do next week. We're gonna start naming names and throw some money numbers out there to what we can expect and kind of make some predictions and match things. And we'll do that next week. But right now, let's talk about the offense. And if we're looking at the quarterback position, we've talked about that at length. Do you think the Cardinals need to do anything at quarterback this offseason?
I mean, I didn't think so.
Like, I don't think they need to. If they're honestly, with all the fun this is, while personally, I don't want the Kyler Murray thing to be like, if they do it, cool. I hope it works out. But I want them to follow a plan and stick to it. And I want to believe that Josh Rosen
see
is
something through, so to speak. Right. Yeah.
I want to believe that Josh Rosen is going to be great. If they're going to do something, if they're going to make a change, I can totally see, and I'm totally on board for swapping out Mike Glennon for a Case Keenan. Anything else doesn't matter. I know Mike Glennon is a guy that Steve Keim loves, but we'll see what happens with that. So need, definitely not a need, but it might be nice because you see Vance Joseph, he's bringing in guys like brought in Brooks Reed, who knows the defensive system. I think we're going to see that on the defensive side of the ball. We probably need to do that on offense as well. And one of the ways that you could do that is with a Case Keenum. I know the Gungus will just say I'm trying to get rid of, have the Cardinals trade all their seventh round picks, and I'm all for that. But I think Case Keenum is a perfect match for what they want to do. If he's willing to take that pay down to what the Glennon deal was, It's a perfect match. He can start. He's well respected. He's a really good guy, really good in the locker room, and he knows that offense.
Yeah, and it would, you know, be helpful, like you said, to bring in a guy that is versed in the offense and can help others become versed in it as well.
At running back, I don't think there's a dang thing they need to do.
No, I mean, I don't think so. It doesn't mean that they won't, because it is a new offense and we don't really know what we're expected out of the running backs. You and I like, obviously, the Johnson-Edmonds combo. So if they feel like they need to add an athlete or add something different at the third or fourth running back position, you know, whether it be moving on from TJ Logan or DJ Foster or, you know, any of those guys, then so be it. But it's not, like you said, it's not going to be something that we're openly pushing for.
Receiver, what do they need to do?
Oh my gosh. How much time do we have? I mean, I think you have to hope that Christian Kirk continues on his trend of where he was headed in 2018, which looked, you know, at the time like a guy that could be a very good number two receiver in the NFL. Fitz, you just have to hope he's healthy and can continue to be productive. From there, I mean, you're going to have to bring in at least one veteran. Like, I don't see any way that they don't bring in at least, and not a Bryce Butler type veteran, but an
I was just going to say that it can't be your receiver you get in free agency can't be Bryce Butler.
Right. It has to be a guy that can compete and contribute.
Right. So it's got to be a fringe 2-3, kind of on the same type of level as Kirk, but that is this flexible enough in the offense. But at the same time, I think drafting a receiver day two receiver, unless you find a gem late, I think it's got to be a must. So that's one you've got to address in both. You've got to bring someone in free agency, and you've got to get it. You can't just rely on the sixth and seventh round where nothing good happens for the Cardinals. And you want to target a guy. So, you know, and Isabella, perfectly fine. I know Antoine Wesley knows Cliff Kingsbury's offense. He's a guy who could get drafted, but I think you've got to do both. You've got to double up at receiver.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you got to find two guys that can come in here and just really be contributors. However they do it, you know, it's unfortunate that you're talking about maybe moving on from a third round pick in year three, but it is also the reality of what this kind of has been for the Cardinals.
Yeah. At tight end.
Oh yeah.
Well, here's the thing with Charles Clay, that is their veteran number one type signing.
Right.
I think Ricky Seals Jones, I think they still see enough in him. And based on, if you want to look back at Kingsbury's first year at Texas Tech, you see what Jason Morrow did, and I think you can see the potential for what a Clay or a Seals Jones can do, but you can't stay there. I don't know if they're going to need a true blocking tight end, even though Sean Coogler says they're going to run some two tight end sets. I don't know how much they're going to do that. So do they need, like, I think obviously you'd go with veteran depth, maybe like a guy like John Phillips that had it last year, maybe, but something like that. And then I think you have to add someone in the draft as well. I think you have to double up, but the guy that you sign in free agency is a back of the roster.
Right.
Now, left tackle. Do they need to do anything with left tackle?
I mean, the hard part is that we still have – I mean, we're assuming that they're going to keep DJ Humphreys. It sounds like they don't have a choice, that they're going to have to keep DJ Humphreys at this point. So we'll kind of see where that goes. But – obviously, with the history of DJ Humphreys, you will always say yes. They need something at left tackle.
But the question is going to be, are they going to lean on the guys? Is that just bringing back John Wetzel? Is that leaning on Corey Cunningham, which leads us to the right tackle position? Because it's not like you're going to go like at left tackle. You can't bring in a guy who's a legit starting left tackle. They cost too much.
Right. We just went over that. They don't have the money.
So. Right. And right tackle. What are they going to have to do? Are they going to be able to spend big on a right tackle?
That's the thing. I mean, we can kind of hit all three of these at once right now if you want to. They're going to have to decide what they're going to do with Justin Pugh. Like, what position is he going to play? He's had his most success at left guard in the NFL, but he's had some success at right tackle as well. So that's what the question becomes, is what positions – what position are they going to use Pugh at? If he's going to be the right tackle, then
you need two guards.
Then you need two guards. If he's going to be a left guard, then they need a right guard and a right tackle. So it just like Justin Pugh is kind of the moving piece that is going to decide exactly what they're going to do with the rest of that offensive line, because they absolutely need a right tackle or they need two guards, like you said. So the right guard is, unless they're putting Pugh back there, right guard is a complete need at this point. The question is going to be, is Pugh going to get a shot at left guard or right tackle? And that's going to decide whether or not they need to go out and spend on that. I would say they absolutely have to. That's a great question. I don't have an answer for you on that. I really, truly don't. But what I do have an answer on is that they have to address it.
And right.
If they don't, it doesn't matter if it's Josh Rosen. I mean, if they don't, honestly, they should just draft Kyler Murray because he'll play. Because Josh Rosen's poor body is not going to be able to hold on.
Right. So the thing is that we've seen the Cardinals spend big on free agents. Justin Pugh, they did it. They've done it before with Mike Iupati and Jared Valdir.
And even Andre Smith, it's not like they got him for cheap. I mean, they didn't pay an absorbent amount, but they did pay him well.
But my question is, are they going to go in for the 4 or 5 year deal? Or are they going to look for the journeyman older guy that they get for a year or two, looking ahead with an eye towards? Because I know they want to sign Ode Abushi. I don't know what they intend on re-signing him for. If they want him as a fringe depth potential starter who can fill in, and then there's Corey Cunningham. I mean,
they like him, yeah.
Steve Keim talked to him. They kind of have him penciled in as a potential starter, but you don't want to go into the offseason planning on that. So are they going to go after? So are one of those positions, are they going to go big at right tackle and thus basically kind of groom Cunningham maybe for left tackle in 2020? Or a guy who can play right tackle, left tackle, that they shift over there to left, and then Cunningham brings up in the next year? Or are they going to spend big on guard and then go with kind of the journeyman plus Cunningham to compete at right tackle? That's kind of the way you go. And then, of course, they need a draft, but where do they make that pick? Is that at 33? If you get a guy at 33, that's a guy you hope might be able to start. And there's a bunch of names that are going to come up. Every mock draft I've seen, particularly from my guy at DraftWire, Luke Easterling, it's almost been a different tackle every mock draft in the second round. Which, if that's the way they go, because if they spend big at right tackle, it's going to feel weird drafting a tackle in the second round, right?
Right. And so that's what the question becomes. I mean, they have to address two spots on the offensive line at least. I mean, it's just, there's not a choice. So the question becomes, are there more than two spots that they want to address? Like, are they going to be aggressive? Or like you said, is it going to be, hey, we're going to address one of these spots in free agency on a short-term deal. You know, I know we're not talking names, but like grabbing like a 32-year-old or 31-year-old Roger Saffold, and then going to get, you know, a young guy in the draft, or are they going to try to go get like a young guy like a George Fant, who's 27, sign him to like a 4 or 5 year deal, and then go get another, you know, to kind of give yourself a look at a potential, you know, four positions locked up for 4 years type of idea.
Maybe. Now, we've kind of skipped over centers because we think they're pretty set there.
We're assuming that they're set with Mason Cole.
Mason Cole slash maybe AQ Shipley. I'll be perfectly honest, the extension they gave AQ Shipley did not do anything to guarantee him a spot on the roster. It actually, I believe it was more of a cap move, and the fact that they like him because he would be good as depth or as a starter either way. Assuming he can come back from the knee injury, which there's question about that to begin with at his age. When we come back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, we'll wrap this up talking about the defensive side of the ball, where there definitely are some holes. That's kind of next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Now let's talk about the defensive side of the ball. If we want to go interior on out and then moving back, defensive tackle is a huge question mark, where right now the only thing we know is Corey Peters is older and under contract. Robert Kimdichie's got an ACL. Rodney Gunter's a free agent. Orson Pierre's going to be a free agent. And then you've got these guys like Vincent Valentine. And
those are wrong people. You can't fool me.
Sony Tassini and Siupeli Anu. Well, he's not actually even on the team anymore. So you've got these depth guys. Isn't defensive tackle, if they're going to have to throw money at it?
Well, and that's kind of the thing this year with that I've, you know, and I wrote about it today for Revenge of the Birds, is when you look at the defensive line, one, or the defensive free agents, one, man, they're tailor-made for the 34. Like, the Cardinals picked a great season to go back to being a 34 defense. And then two,
they just need bodies, because right. Now they're going to need a rotation of 5 to 6 NFL
caliber. They
need three starters, and they need at least two guys that are okay.
Yeah, and when you look at it, you say, you know, if they were to make a play, and so I can talk about this guy because he's not even available anymore. By the way, I didn't even know this. Marcus Hunt, who I thought would have been a nice target, he's 32. I had no idea he was 32 years old. He must have been like 27 when he was drafted. But yeah, so Hunt, you know, I thought would have been a nice fit because, you know, fits into 34, would blah, blah, blah. And so you look at that and you go, okay, if you go at a guy like Marcus Hunt, and then another, you know, who's like a second tier guy, so like a, you know, a $5 million a year guy, which is basically what he got, and then you add a big name like an $8 to $10 million a year guy, wouldn't that take you out of potentially taking Quinnen Williams at the same time? So that's kind of been my other reason, and we'll talk about Williams and Bosa and all that stuff later, but that's kind of been my other reason that I have been trumpeting Bosa, is because, like, when you look at the available talent on the defensive line that plays in a 34 is really, really freaking good in this free agent period. And it would really make a lot of sense to go get one of those guys and change over kind of that look of that front line.
Right. So you're going to have to, in my opinion, you're going to have to throw money at two starters in free agency, and you need to draft And then you're going to, there's, that's the thing about the, with the defensive interior, especially running a 3-4, you don't necessarily have to take high end guys. Cause then you get rotation. It's like Ed Stinson. He played forever with the Cardinals and was solid. So if a great defensive tackle falls in your lap in the second round, or it's Quinnen Williams at the top of the first, that's great. Other, but you can add the depth of that. But they're going to have to throw money in free agency and draft at least one, I think.
Oh yeah,
because they need the bodies.
They
need the bodies.
This is the year to need the bodies, though. That's the whole thing. Is like they picked a really good year, honestly, to need on the defensive side of the ball. Offensively, it's always difficult to find talented offensive linemen, as the Cardinals have shown throughout their franchise history. But defensively, like finding 34 down linemen going to be a thing this offseason. And then finding off-ball linebackers is going to be a thing this offseason. And so like both groups are very strong in the free agency and the draft. And that, you know, it, say what you will about Keim not being prepared for a lot of things. At least he's given himself a chance this offseason.
Right. Now, the matter is how much money will they have. Now, let's move out to the edge at outside linebacker. Obviously, Chandler Jones is a lock. They've got that side taken care of. They bring in Brooks Reed. The question is, and this actually plays into the quarterback part, because if they really like Nick Bosa, you don't need to go out and really spend more money at that position, because Brooks Reed is your placeholder, is your first and second down player who will start early on until Bosa's ready. But you've got guys out there. So if you think you're leaning towards quarterback, then you have to throw some money at a guy, because you can't, like, with this edge position at the 3-4 outside linebacker, even this, especially, that's not a position you can expect someone to draft and start right away. They're always going to rotate in, and especially if it's out of the first round.
Right. And so the edge, that, you know, that again plays into why I've said Bosa from the beginning, because when you look at this edge class, there's a lot of veteran talent, but have you seen the numbers that these guys are getting?
Like Justin Houston, but he will not be cheap.
Right. And so so you're going to get an edge player. Like there's some available, like Shaq Barrett. Are you going to be able to get him on a 1-year deal? You know, I don't think so. Frank Clark got, you know, franchise. Preston Smith is, you know, that's going to cost you. Yeah. William Hayes is 40. He's 34, but
Cameron Wake,
37. Lorenzo Alexander, 37. So like, there's all these guys, and then the big names are all going back to where they were.
Right.
So did you see the number that's getting thrown around for Trey Flowers?
Oh no, I didn't. But it's
17 million.
Oh,
so like that's the whole thing. You're not. I mean, you want to talk about rookie quarterback money? Like going and getting a rookie outside linebacker pass rusher is almost as valuable, honestly. Because and when you think about it, it's actually more valuable because you have two of them. So, you know, paying two pass rushers $30 million is akin to paying one quarterback $30 million. So if you're able to have a pass rusher like a Nick Bosa, I mean, you're making me mad that there's even talk about Kyler Murray.
The more I know.
This goes on.
It's so perfect. It's so perfect for this Cardinals defense to take Bosa at the top, because you're already sold on Rosen. And you fix up Vance Joseph's defense to be great, because oh my gosh! But so yeah, that's we can talk that more about later. But that is, it's frustrating because you're thinking like, if you're going to call Kyler Murray, but Bosa's perfect,
right?
Could you imagine Chandler Jones, Nick Bosa.
Right. And then you go get, you know, like you said, then you draft another guy in on day two or day three, and then you sign two free agents and on the down line and a linebacker.
Wake makes sense then.
Yeah.
Because then you've got this nice little rotation of Jones and Wake and Bosa and Reed, and that your position set, but your long term is set as well. Now, off the ball, Reddick's, you can ink him in. They're going to play him.
They have to at this point.
That's it. But they have to have a starter. Now, we you know, Brandon Marshall's probably the guy that's going to end up here, in my opinion, but they have to pay someone to be a starter, and they have to have people to play behind him. Whether that's bringing back a Gerald Hodges. Gerald Hodges is a replacement level player. He's a good guy to have on your team, and he's played in a 3-4 defense before when he was with San Francisco. So I think you bring back Gerald Hodges to bridge that gap, because he's a fringe like starter on a bad team type of a linebacker, but you'd still need to throw money at. You need somebody to start. You need somebody to start, whether that's throwing a lot of money at him or kicking the can down the thing, bringing a guy in for a year or two, and then letting Reddick develop into that star.
Right. And so I think it's an obvious need at this point. And it goes into the entire, defensively, obviously they need bodies at the down lineman position, but you can convince me that the off-ball linebackers, the most important need they have right now. The crazy thing is, and this is what we talked about, is like in Vance Joseph's defense, he said that you can scheme success out of these players as off-ball linebackers. So that's, obviously when we're talking about this last year, we were talking about, Hassan Reddick and Dale Buchanan are perfect for Steve Wilkes' defense. So we don't really know anything. So
quarterback, they're not set.
You're never set
in terms of what you should expect. They don't have a guy to play the slot.
No, and you're never set in the NFL. The Broncos have proven that. The Patriots have proven that. Even the Seahawks have proven that. You always need somebody or something more. But yeah, their need is, the nice thing is with Alfred's ability to play either slot or boundary, they don't necessarily need one or the other. They just need whoever's the best. I don't know if they can afford to go get one now after they've already paid Alfred. So that's what the question becomes is, that's the problem is when you have a team with all these holes, you can't fill them all in one off season. And that's just the unfortunate reality.
For me, there is one position where they don't need to address. And that's safety. Right. Safety. And they have too many players. Honestly, right. They have too many starting caliber players, because now with Buda Baker moving back from the slot to safety, you've now got Buda Baker, DJ Swearinger, Antoine Bethea, and the potential of re-signing Trey Boston. The Cardinals have been playing three safeties on the field, it seems like, for a decade. It doesn't sound like it's going to happen anymore. So Swearinger is locked in. Buddha's locked in. Will they keep Bethea around? He'd be costly as a rotation, as a fringe guy. When you've got other guys on your roster, you've got younger players, or you could just bring in someone who's cheaper.
Right, exactly. And so that's where, again, you're always one injury away type of thing. But at this point, I think we can say the safety position is the one that they've invested in heavily and actually gotten production out of. So we'll see if that continues to be the reality. Steve Keim has done a really nice job of getting safeties. I think that
there we go. That Keim has done safeties well.
So that's been his strength as a GM at this point.
On special teams, let's not forget special teams. I think they're okay. I think they're in perfectly great shape with the return game because they've got Pharaoh Cooper, who could do both, honestly. They've got Pharaoh Cooper and Christian Kirk. After that, you just throw bodies in there from somewhere. And punter, you're good. Kicker, you're not sure. Because Zanga, there's nothing about Zane Gonzalez's play that would say that you can just bank on him.
Right. And so that's the biggest thing is, you know, I just don't think they can invest in it. Right.
No, like
that's the hard part is they just can't really invest in that position at this point. So you have to wait and maybe address it with one of your 9th and 7th round picks or something of that nature.
Oh, kickers. We're service going to be. It's going to be a kicking battle between Zane Gonzalez and some 7th rounder.
Yeah, exactly.
That will be Mr. Irrelevant.
just to make Jess mad that he had to stand out at the Tempe facility.
Please. Like, I'm going to have to be there like day one, pick number one, day three. The very end, and pick, not the very pick
254,
end.
54, baby.
Three of the last 6 picks, like that.
Should be a good time though.
Oh, let's wrap this up. That'll wrap up this long edition of the Rise of Sea Red podcast. We'll be back in a week. We'll be talking about free agency in depth. I mean, unless there's more Kyler Murray news or Josh Rosen's been traded or something. Yeah. So we will be back in a week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jets Root. This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.